like the physical journey is it's just one part of the whole healing. I guess the harder part is the mental journey as well that comes with it. It got to the point where I was starting to have suicidal thoughts, and that's probably when I hit sort of rock bottom, I think. And everyone sort of just thinks, oh God, there's something wrong with you. There isn't anything wrong with you. You're just needing some help to get yourself out of this bad place.
It was hard to hear because you care about someone.
And it's making me teary now, then. Look at
this is where you are now. Forget the past. It's about overcoming now, not the past. It's the case with everything, isn't it? Like, when you're looking forward, it's very difficult to see how the pieces fit together. When you look back, it's very easy to put the pieces together and see how, you know, the journey goes. And this is what keeps me optimistic in life. It's just to keep remembering that the pieces will fit. You just have to keep going. Welcome to the Stronger, Fitter, Happier podcast. I'm your host, Vin, and today I am joined by the wonderful Latta. So if you don't know who Latta is, which you may not because I haven't told you who she is just yet, she is a wonderful human being. I used to train, I don't know how long ago it was now, maybe 2 years ago, but I used to train her in the gym on a one-to-one personal training basis. And the reason why I started training her was because she went through, I'd probably say, a horrific accident and had to start from a point where she had to rebuild not only her leg, but also like a lot of her self-confidence, her mental well-being, just her as a person, and just get up and start rebuilding. And she did that. And she has done that, I should say. She's done it over a period of time. And today I wanted to share her story and just explain what she's done, what she's overcome in her words, and let her have that opportunity to tell you guys and inspire you. So let's go. Latta, would you like to introduce yourself a little bit, add to what I had to say?
Thanks for the introduction and thanks for having me on the podcast.
So, You're welcome.
My name's Latta. I joined Body and Beyond, I think about 2 years ago, I think you're right. It was about, I think after I stopped all my sort of physio and I thought it's probably time I got a little bit more stronger everywhere else apart from my leg. And the reason why I needed physio was in October 2018, I was involved in a motorbike accident. That night I sort of broke my right femur. If anyone doesn't know what a femur is, it's the strongest bone in your body, it's your thigh bone. And I managed to clean break it off. Thankfully it hadn't broken skin, but it had completely detached itself completely. So at that point in time, my legs weren't connected to each other, which is weird to think now. And that's sort of what happened to me. And that was, I have had sort of 3 operations since then, all on the same leg, all trying to fix this leg and trying to get me as strong as possible. So my first operation was in October, actually, after the accident, and that was sort of a week later. I don't know why they left it so long, but they attached this huge steel plate onto my leg, which wasn't really fixing the bone. So I had to have it redone. So they took the plate out and put a titanium nail through the femur. And fast forward to now, I've still got this titanium nail in my femur, but I've sort of got a few less screws in place now. So that's always a good thing to be less metallic.
And what happened, if you don't mind explaining? So you said you had a motorcycle accident. What exactly happened?
So the night I had the accident, I was a pavilion passenger. There was a car speeding in and out on a dual carriageway. It was pretty dark as well. It was about 11 o'clock at night. So the person that was speeding didn't see the bike, and there wasn't enough space for him to sort of swerve away. So he hit what we believe he hit my right femur while he was trying to sort of get away from us. And that sort of flung me off the bike. Like a lot of it, I was flung quite a distance. And I sort of rolled around on the floor. And once I managed to stop, I realized that I'm actually being hit. It took me a while to realize what had actually happened, but I did see the guy speed off. So it was a hit and run at the time. At the time that I got hit, I do remember that one of the vivid memories I still always have with me is trying to get up and trying to walk to safety. It's everyone's natural instinct to avoid other cars basically hitting you. And I remember I couldn't get back up onto my feet, so I ended up crawling to safety. And I was wearing dark jeans, but I could still see a lot of blood seeping through my jeans, which is weird. So yeah, that's still one of my strongest memories. And I just remember thinking, I can't believe he's driven off. They could have killed us that day and he didn't really care. So yeah, that's how I ended up with a broken femur.
That's a crazy experience to have, and I'm sure like it was very difficult like to just transition through that period. Like, what was your first instinct in the days after? Like, what were you thinking? What was your mindset like?
It's one of those moments where it's really surreal. So I knew I was in hospital, and I was thinking, shit, how do I tell? It was on a Sunday evening, and I didn't know how to tell my mom and dad the next day, because obviously I lived with my family then, and if I didn't turn back home, if I didn't come back home, they'd be wondering where the hell I was. So a phone call to my mom and dad at about midnight wasn't ideal, but that's what ended up happening. And they were obviously worried for me. I said, I'm alive. I'm talking to you. So it's just a broken bone. And this is always what I've done. I've always downplayed this. For me, it's not an injury. I know it's more than an injury, but I've always downplayed this. And I think after the accident, I was still downplaying it, even though I could see the severity of it. I was just saying, oh, it's just a broken bone. They, you know, doctors heal broken bones all the time. So that's what I had in my head the whole time while I was bed bound for almost a week waiting for the operation to happen. I was just thinking it's just a broken bone. So mentally I was positive, in a weird way. Yeah. But it was only after I realized that the bone wasn't healing, that's when it all sort of went crashing down. It was a little bit more traumatic for me after that, I guess.
How long did you kind of know that things weren't going the way you thought they would?
I think this is human nature. So I think every month I'd have to go back to see how much the bone was healing, because obviously bones do take a while. They need, and what I know now, they need contact with each other to start sort of forming the calcium, I guess it's called, to sort of heal up. And every month I'd go back to get my x-rays. Every month I'd be looking at this weird leg, which I still couldn't believe was what was my leg there. And the doctors were kept saying, oh, there's nothing happening, you have to come back next month. And the next month I'd go back again and it was still the same. Oh, nothing's happening, you need to come back next month. And every time I went to these appointments, I'd be so hopeful that today they're going to tell me I can start walking or I can start putting some weight on my leg. Because up until then I was still on crutches, not putting any weight on my leg as well. But it's so disheartening to keep going back. And then on the sixth month, they said, we're probably going to have to take the metal out and try doing another procedure on you. And that's when it was sort of rock bottom for me, because I was thinking, oh my God, so I've just spent 6 months of my life here, bedbound, not being able to do anything. And this is pre-COVID times as well. So everyone else is sort of living their life and enjoying going out and about and seeing each other. And there's me, it's a very lonely place to be in.
Yeah.
Just me. And I think that every time I went, I was hoping that they would just give me some good news, and it just wasn't coming.
It's a very difficult time to go through. Like, what kept you going over that 6 month period of just, was it just the hope of seeing something?
Yeah, it was the hope of just getting better. I think that what it was, when I got given my second operation day, I actually went privately, because no offense to the NHS, I appreciate everything that they do for us, but they had let me down massively for the one time I needed them in my whole life practically. I think it was just bad luck, I think, for my surgeon. But the only thing that was hopeful was from after they told me I needed the second op, I just refused NHS service and I went privately. And the hope for me there was, okay, I found a surgeon, I picked him. He does it all day, every day. He basically does this every day in his sleep, he says. And that was my hope, that, okay, he's going to fix me and I'm going to get walking on it this day after the operation. So that's what kept me going. So I was like, the only thing that was for me, I just wanted to start walking so I can start rebuilding my life again.
And is that what the surgeon had said, that you'd be able to walk after the operation?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't as simple as that, because you saw me pretty much about 2 weeks after the second op. So yeah, it wasn't as easy as off you go now, you're all fixed. But
yeah. I saw how you're walking. It's just about walking, basically.
But for me, it was just getting weight on my leg. And because my leg hadn't sort of touched floor, I guess, for 6 months, it was sort of stuck in this, I don't even have, it wasn't flat basically, it was sort of on a tippy toe all the time. So I had to sort of train it to roll how naturally a foot would roll.
I remember doing like drills with you at the gym in terms of like going through little motions like squats and things like that, and having to like elevate your heels for you so you could then put weight through them and things like that. And slowly, I guess it was improving, but it is a very slow, gradual process to where you are now.
I still can't do the squats how I guess everyone else would do the squats. I still need to elevate up. And that's 3 years down the line still.
Yeah, but this is the thing. Like, you've gone... What a lot of people fail to remember or fail to think about is, not you, but just generally, is that when something significant happens in your life, it's life-changing and you're never going to be the same. You've altered every experience every time you have something. It's like all those books behind you. Every time you've read one of them, you've become something slightly different. You've evolved. And while that's a positive evolution, a lot of people fail to think, will think of something like a traumatic experience and something they don't want less of a evolution, but more as like, this is a negative experience. I need to go back to my old ways, when that's just never going to happen. Yeah. This is new you now.
Yeah, I think that took me a long time to realize. Like, I knew to a certain point that I wasn't going to get back to where I was. But in my head, I was thinking, I'm going to get close though, right? No, I wasn't going to get close. And I think I slowly realized that a little bit after.
But to be fair, like, you don't have to even get close. You can be a stronger version than what you were before.
True.
Like, even though you have slight limitations, like, you know, like ankle mobility or range in your legs, it doesn't really mean that you can't be strong in the range that you do have. It doesn't mean that you can't be super strong in the way you squat now. Like, even me, I have some limited, maybe not as much as yours, but limited ankle mobility, and I just squat with wedges. So wear platform squat shoes and squat with wedges, or elevate my heels and get more depth in my squat, and then I can work the muscle fully. And it's just about altering the environment to suit your needs. And this is what, like, obviously great training is about. Like, you can just change things and alter things, but it's kind of like a metaphor for life. Like, you can adjust the environment to suit your needs to make it basically work for you in your favor and be a very strong version and adapt to the environment. But people who fail to adapt metaphorically will die. If it's only in their mind, or, you know, you could have stayed stuck in a place, in a hole, and not be where you are now, where you're positive, where you're like, you know, you're done really well in all fronts, and you could be stuck where you were before, like, you know, like bedbound and not accepting.
I mean, it did take a while, if I'm honest, Evan, because I think after the second op, I think it took Rush to come and see me. Rush is my physio. My therapist, he actually came to visit me because I was just, you know what, I can't be bothered with this. And he told me to suck it up, basically. He gave me tough loving. And I think that's what sort of snapped me out of it a little bit, because I was self-mopping around a little bit. And then he said, just text me whenever you've done. I had to do like 5 very simple exercises a day for like 10 reps. And that's all it was. And I was refusing to do those. But I think I needed some tough loving. He said to message me every time I've done one. And that's what snapped me out of it. He goes, only you can do this. No one else is going to be able to do this for you. I said, there's always people along, you know, on your journey to help you along the way, but ultimately they can't do your exercises for you, so you're going to have to do it.
Yeah, it's really true, isn't it? Like, I wish the amount of people that come to us for support and really, really want a goal or want to achieve something, you know, like, you know how our process is. We always ask you why you're doing this at the start. Mm-hmm. And most people will have the strongest whys. Whys that almost bring me to tears in a consultation. And I just want to do it for them. Like, because you know, as professionals who care about what they do, we're passionate. Like, it's an overused term, but that's what I mean. You're passionate about what you do. It's because you care about what you do. And if it came to it, like, you would just do everything for the person who's coming to see you.
You wish you could have done it for me.
I would have done it. Like, you know, I like enjoy training. It's not a problem to me to work out. Like, I would have done it for you, but unfortunately you can't. Do you get what I mean? The most I can do is be there with you every moment of every workout, but other than that, it's down to you to turn up. It's down to you to even put the effort in the session and all the other stuff that goes with, you know, comes with training in terms of recovery, getting to bed on time, eating well, all those things. It's down to you in the end, isn't it? So when you did get into the mindset of like getting in, you know, so you've gone to the physio, you've gone to R&D. What happened there in terms of like your progress? What was your mindset like? What obstacles did you face at that point?
So prior to the accident, I did go to the gym a lot. So what, all of a sudden having to only concentrate on this leg and trying to get myself into a better frame of, like, better state of walking, I guess. So when I started back with the Rushes team, I was just excited to be in a gym, if I'm honest. Like, the first day I was going to the gym, I was so excited. I couldn't drive myself to the gym. I had to get myself Uber to the gym, try and get everyone to help, Rush was helping me out of the Uber with my crutches. And that, I didn't even care how I got there. I just wanted to be inside the gym. And I remember, so I used to get so much attention. It was at Snap Fitness back then. And just the attention that I got from people. And I was like, it's really sweet. People were always willing to help there. But I just remember, just leave me alone. I just want to get on with my exercises. but it was really tough because it was always still brand new. So my bone hadn't joined. It was, the sort of cuts were still there. I still had my bandages on. But I was like, I'm still going to do this. But it was so painful. I remember thinking, shit, is this going to be this hard forever? But I do know that it was, obviously now I know it was a gradual increase in sort of mobility and just getting stronger. But back then I still couldn't see the light at the end of the tunnel, this stupid light at the end of the tunnel that everyone kept talking to me about didn't exist in my world. So I was thinking, it's still sort of dark in my world. When is it going to start lightening up? And it's now I can see the journey, but back then it was just nothing's happening. I can't see how I'm getting better.
I think whatever, like, it's the case with everything, isn't it? Like, when you're looking forward, it's very difficult to see how the pieces fit together. When you look back, it's very easy to put the pieces together and see how, you know, the journey goes. And this is what keeps me optimistic in life. It's just to keep remembering that the pieces will fit. You just have to keep going.
Absolutely.
Yeah. When you're in the storm, it's very difficult to see out of it.
100%.
Yeah. I mean, what kept you going then at that point when you were in the storm?
It was that people kept telling me, just keep going. It will get better. It will get better, 100%. And I believe people to a certain point. Some of it was sort of me denying that it's going to get any better because I've been in this sort of, in this world for almost 6 months. So I've been not getting better for 6 months. And all of a sudden you're telling me I'm going to get better. And I was like telling myself, just trust the professionals. They see this all the time. So every time I did end up going afterwards, I could see some improvement. Whether the weights are going up or I was just able to do a little bit more reps or I was walking a little bit less limpy, I guess. So there was things that I was seeing. And once the progress started happening a lot quicker, that's when I was sort of more motivated to keep going and just keep going. I wasn't going to stop now.
Yeah, that's such a good like way of keeping yourself going. It's just focusing on the progress as opposed to where you once were. It just reminds me of stuff I used to say to you now. Yeah. Like when we were training and just, you know, I used to say to you, like, stop comparing yourself, because you used to get frustrated with like, oh, I used to be able to do this, or it's so annoying. Like, you know, like, or you'd even compare sometimes to other people, like, oh, like, I wish I could do it like that. Or when will I get to be there? And I used to just say, look, wipe the slate clean. This is where you are now. Forget the past. It's about overcoming now, not the past.
Yeah.
And just progressing from this point. And when you did that, obviously, as human nature, you do quickly snap out of that and start comparing to the past and to others. But when you were focused on just improving from yesterday, you were the happiest and you were the making the most progress.
Yeah, definitely.
So what has changed since then? Like, in terms of like the healing, what you've been able to do, if people are, you know, have watched your journey on Instagram, they'll have seen all the things you've kind of gone through, but like, what, just list off some of the things that you've gone from a broken leg completely snapped away and just being bed bound and then slowly starting to recover in physio and having to struggle out of a cab. What have you kind of done now? Where are you now?
A few months ago, I think my biggest achievement, like activity wise, I did complete Hadrian's Wall, which is, if you don't know what it is, it's like a 6-day hike. And it's over 45 kilometers. I think, I can't even remember how many steps I did, but it was a lot of walking. The longest day was sort of 8 hours of walking. And if you told me 2 years ago that in 2 years' time, Marty, you're going to be walking for like 8 hours straight, up and down a mountain of all things, I would have not believed that person. Like I said, that's just stupid. That's not going to be me. But yeah, that was probably one of my biggest highlights. And then, like, I don't always say it. I don't think anyone ever said they're sort of proud of themselves, but I think after I'd completed that, I was like, I'm actually pretty proud of my little body. Like, it's taken me, it's getting me so far. And I don't think people do give their bodies enough credit for these things, because you can train as much as you want, but I think people forget to say thanks for looking after me, I guess, and, you know, nourishing me and making sure I'm well enough to get you through something like this.
It's actually a really important thing to practice, I think, anyway. Well, I'm the same as you. It's not something I do very often, but recently I watched like a YouTube video by this guy that I've recently started to like follow a lot, Ali Abdaal, and he's doing the same thing. Like, he's on this journey of like doing new, like finding things like gratitude and stuff like that and journaling. And one thing he's suggested was, in your gratitude journal or whatever you're doing, try not to just show appreciation for all these external things. So every day I usually write the same thing. I'm grateful for my family, grateful for my children, grateful for my partner. And it's normally the same thing, and I can't help it. It's just what I feel grateful for. But now I've started to include one thing that I'm grateful for in myself. And it's a weird thing to write down, because it almost feels a bit egocentric, but it's not. It's like, it's self-love. Because if you don't love yourself and you love where you are, your body, the things it's capable of, it's very difficult to accept love from others and also give it to others as well, because you're coming from a point of self-hatred, so you're never going to really feel good about yourself.
I think that's one thing I've definitely learned. Like, the physical journey is just one part of the whole healing. I guess the harder part is the mental journey as well that comes with this. And I think I've had sort of lots and lots of therapy sessions now, because I had so much hate, I guess, towards the driver, and how little he sort of got as a punishment. In the UK, you just don't get a punishment, basically. So I had so much anger towards this person. And for most people that do know me, I'm not an angry person. I'm usually the most chilled out person in the entire world. So if all of a sudden I got all this anger in my head, and I was like, I didn't know what to do with it. And when I started therapy, she's the one that sort of started me off with sort of the gratitude list. And back then I used to do what you were doing, writing down everything that you were thankful for, and nothing was ever about me. And she picked up on that as well. So she started saying, you know, what are you thankful for in yourself though? What do you want to, if you were an outsider's point, if you were your friend, for example, what would you be thankful for in you? And I think that was sort of a nail on the head there, thinking, Dolata, what are you actually thankful for? And that's when I sort of started rolling out the things that I am actually grateful for in my own self.
I'm so glad you did that. And I actually wanted to ask you about, like, you know, there's a lot of big stigma about going to therapy in the UK. Like, if you do that, there's something wrong with you almost. Or you, people who go to therapy, there's something wrong. Whereas in the US, people use therapy as like the gym for the mind. Like, I've heard a lady, I can't remember her name, but she's like a really big YouTuber who talks about therapy a lot. And she said about, it's just literally the gym for her mind, and that's why she goes. She doesn't do it to, because she's, well, she started because there was things wrong and she wanted help with, but now it's more a case of preventing things from, you know, being her mind not being healthy, basically. What did you get from therapy?
I mean, I got a lot from therapy, if I'm honest. It's easier to talk to someone you don't know, and I didn't believe that until I actually started talking to someone. And I'm actually a closed book, which is what I found out. And I knew I needed help, but I wasn't very vocal about it, basically. So she goes, you're really, she's actually said, I'm a closed book. Like, I just don't want to talk about it. So she started something called EMDR. I can't remember what it actually means, stands for, but it's trying to connect to another part of your brain while you're sort of in a trance, I want to call it, but she's tapping sort of left and right sides of your brain. And it's supposed to put you in happy places, what I call it. The outcome from therapy for me was that I was suffering from PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And I think I remember telling you this. And I do remember sometimes when I'd come to the gym, or I'd call them episodes, where I'd sort of just withdraw into myself and I just won't talk to anyone. And I didn't know then what was happening, but she said, therapist did say that it's probably a little PTSD. Traumatic stress disorder, I can't actually even say it. But yeah, she picked up on that quite quickly. And I think I remember coming to your sessions a few times with you, and you were like, are you all right? And I was like, yeah, I was in denial about everything. So it was very visible to other people, but I just don't think anyone knew what it was. But I think to be diagnosed with something and actually get told that I've got this it's like anyone else as well. I think once I know what I've got, I can fix this. Let me try and help myself. And that's what it was. It was more of a knowing what I've got, and now let me work with her to help me.
Yeah, I mean, it's great that you kind of took that step to go. Like, what made you even start? Like, where did you start with even searching for a therapist, or did someone suggest it? Or
not really. This is probably going to sound a little bit more vulnerable than I would like it to sound, but it got to the point where I was starting to have suicidal thoughts, and that's probably when I hit sort of rock bottom, I think. And if I think back now, thinking, shit, if someone actually found me, if my mum or my grandma found me, because that's just sort of heartbreaking right now. And I think back then I was in such a bad place that I didn't actually care. So I was literally going to take my painkillers. But as soon as I had the thought, I completely took it out of my head. And I snapped back into reality, basically. So as soon as I had the thought, I was like, okay, we need to sort this out. I'm sort of dealing with the physical aspect of me, but I'm not dealing with the mental side of this at all. And now I know the physical side is probably the easiest thing to heal, but mentally you just can't heal. Like, it just takes a long time to heal. So yeah, I literally got in touch with my lawyers because I wanted a trauma specialist to help me rather than just a regular therapist, I guess.
Well, I'm so glad you did reach out to someone for help, because, well, as you can see, but probably by my face and the reaction I had from that, like, I care about you. You're someone I trained for a very long time, for a very long time. Like, people I train, it sounds crazy, but I see them often more than I see family and friends. So you develop a very close relationship with people. And to hear you say that was not, I wouldn't say hurtful, because like, it hurt me like that, but it was hard to hear because you care about someone. And
it's making me teary now, Vin.
Well, you know, it's I'm so happy that, you know, you were able to overcome feeling like that. And I'm trying not to cry on a podcast, but I do feel genuinely like filled with emotion right now that, you know, you were able to be strong enough to move past and keep going and not do anything that would have hurt all of the people around you, but mostly yourself. You know, like, you would have been a great loss to this world.
Well, this is one of those things, I think, prior to the accident, I always just think suicidal thoughts for anyone that committed suicide is really selfish. But I was like, it's not selfish. I think they just don't know how to get out of this scenario of being they've got themselves into. And it's like, mine wasn't even self-inflicted. It was something that was just circumstantial. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I get some people to get themselves into situations, but I think it's hard to get themselves out because they've dug themselves in so deep. But reaching out to someone, even just to talk to and listen, for someone to listen to them, does really help. And everyone just thinks, like I said, everyone thinks it's weakness to go for therapy or start saying, oh, I've got a mental health disorder. Everyone sort of just thinks, oh God, there's something wrong with you. There isn't anything wrong with you. You're just needing some help to get yourself out of this bad place.
Yeah, I think people need to just see it as you would see any other, like, nobody cares about calling the doctor up and going, you know, I've got a really bad chest infection, I need some antibiotics. And I know that not everyone's gonna be like, I'm gonna call the doctor up and just get some medication because I'm not feeling well in my head. But therapy and other forms of, like, you know, I'm not saying medication is wrong, by the way. Like, I advocate medication for mental health illnesses in many cases, but there's so many options as well for people who don't feel like medication is the route for them. There is therapy, there is other, like, loads and loads of different things. I'm not an expert on this, so I don't want to speak on it too much, but it's more so that the message I'm trying to get across is, don't feel like you shouldn't reach out for help.
100% agree.
You may feel like, and many people may feel like, you know, there is, I don't know, a weakness in asking for help when it comes to your mind. But there are many, many more people who will be so supportive of you and not make you feel like there's something wrong with you.
Yeah. I think it's such a lonely world to be in when you're in that place on your own. It feels like you're on your own, but even when I was there, I was living with family, so I wasn't alone. And my friends were coming to visit me all the time. So I wasn't alone, but in my head, I was alone. There was nothing anyone could tell me or say to me to make me feel better. And this is why I do think someone that you don't see regularly enough might be able to help you as well.
Yeah, I don't think anyone who's not been through it will truly understand what that feels like, whether it's depression, whether it's like a different form of mental illness. Like, not wanting to be here is something that someone who is feeling completely 100% themselves, and not even just completely 100%, but like even 50% good most days, won't understand what it feels like to be rock bottom. And maybe they don't have to be rock bottom, because rock bottom is subjective.
Yeah.
Do you go? Mm-hmm. I mean, someone like, you know, like business people who have lost, I don't know, millions, but they still have so much, commit suicide. Yeah. But to them, that is such a big, big part of their life that they feel like they need to do something like that.
Yeah.
And it's very subjective to decide what is rock bottom to who and why someone does it. And you think, that's a selfish thing to do, like you said. And I used to be with the same mindset when I was in high school and I heard of people, you know, doing things like this. I used to think, oh, that's just a very selfish thing to do, because you just pass on your pain to the people who are left behind. That was my attitude, and how wrong I was thinking like that, because seeing it a bit closer to home has been, like, not in my home, but as in, like, I've seen it a bit more, like, with more closer friends and things like that. And it's just like, that's not what's happened in those situations. Someone is not trying to be selfish. They're just so unwell almost, and not themselves, that they feel that's the only option they have.
I agree. I think the way I explained it is I think I was hurting so much in my head that I didn't think I could see an escape from this other than just downing these pills that I had here.
Well, I'm glad it didn't go that way, and you were able to overcome, and, you know, had the courage, because that's what it takes, a lot of courage to go and ask for help and go to therapy and not feel like you spoke about openly in the sessions, like when we were training, like you didn't hide from it. It wasn't something that you were like, shy about. Maybe you didn't tell everyone that you were going to therapy, because a lot of people don't, but it's so good that you did that. You said something about that I wanted to come back to, was that you felt angry at this driver because something has happened to you and it wasn't in your control. You didn't have any choice in the matter. You were forced into this traumatic experience and had to deal with it.
Yeah.
What, like, made you be able to overcome that mindset of like anger, and also get out of the stage of like, not woe is me, but like feeling like a victim, because it wasn't your choice to, you know, be hit by a car, is it? It's not like you were doing something. I know people can say like, oh, but being on a motorcycle is dangerous, but it's not within context. Do you get what I mean? If everybody was safe on the road, riding a motorcycle would be also safe.
Yes, exactly. And also saying that he was driving at 70 miles on a 40-mile-an-hour road. So
exactly.
If he was driving at the speed limit, I probably wouldn't have had severe damages to my leg, I guess. I might have just been flung off the bike without a broken leg, maybe. Which is what it's all hearsay, to be fair. I forgot what the question was then, sorry.
Just how did you overcome that? Like, that feeling of anger, and also just the feeling of feeling like a victim who'd been quite literally hit with something that was out of your control.
I think this is where the old Lars sort of comes through. I've always sort of not been an angry person. So when I started to get angry about this guy, I haven't even met him. I've never received an apology from him. He doesn't even speak English, if I'm honest. So even everything was getting done by the translators through my lawyers. It got to the point where it wasn't helping me heal. I was always angry. It felt like everyone that was talking to me about my leg or my recovery, it always ended up back to the driver, me being angry. So it got to the point where I need to stop talking about him and just move on with life. And I started concentrating on all the more sort of positive things that were happening around me. And now I can sort of say I have forgiven him, because I don't actually think he intentionally wanted to hit me. I've never received an actual apology from him, but I like to think deep down that he didn't come out that night to hit me. He didn't come out that night to, you know, speed off after he'd hit me as well. So I've just got to try and think. I keep thinking the positives. He is probably sorry. He's probably not, hopefully not speeding again. and hopefully I'm saving someone that he could have potentially hit and, you know, killed even later on. I'm hoping he has learned a lesson of some sort, and that's what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, even if he hasn't, at the same time, you have to look at it from a point of view that this thing didn't happen to you, even though it did happen and you were affected by it, but it happened. Do you get what I mean? Like, a lot of people, when things happen in the world that they don't want or that they can't control, just like everything that's happened over the past year, you're almost like, why is it happening to me? What did I do? You try and like kind of reason, and it's almost the worst thing to do, because you just have to go, this is not happening to me. It is just something that's happening. And now I have the power to react to it in the way that I want. And that's very hard to do just in the moment. It's a process of doing that, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because when something like that happens, you have to go through a stage of like almost grief, because you've lost something or something's changed in your life. So then you have to process that and go through the stages and do all the things that you have to. But if you have it in your mind that this is not happening to me and I can choose to react to it, it gives you a lot more power, even though you may feel very powerless in the moment. So where are you now? How are you now? What's your mindset like? And
Well, I've moved into my own flat about a year ago, I'd say, November time last year. And I think since then I did go through a little getting used to period, I guess. But I think physically I'm probably at the most strongest I have been in the last 3 years. Like I said, I've been climbing mountains. I'm climbing Snowdon on Saturday.
Oh, wow.
if you didn't know, I do love hiking. I have always hiked my whole life. So to not be able to hike for the time that I was sort of broken, I say with air quotes, was really hard. I just love being outdoors. So I'm looking forward to that. Work is good. I've been promoted while I was sort of broken as well, which is always a shock, because I was like, I haven't been at work for almost a year and a half, but I'm getting promoted as well. Physically I've probably had the strongest. I've lost a lot of weight that I had put on initially from the accident. I think I just wasn't happy with the weight, sort of the size that I was, and it was just because I've never been that size. It wasn't meant to be on me, is how I'm sort of saying it. And just being able to walk a lot more and be more active now, it's just helped my mindset so much more as well. Like, I'm a lot more happier in my mind than ever. I'm still sort of trying to close the law case, which is sort of a little bit frustrating still, because it's 3 years on and I would like to think that this was going to be done last year, for example.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for that to sort of be finalised, and then I can literally just move on with life and put that sort of in the past now.
Yeah, I guess it's nice to have some sort of closure on a period of your life. But at the same time, you can decide what that closure is like. But it's very difficult, especially when people like me keep asking you questions about your journey.
So long, bless you.
But yeah, I get it. Like, you wanted to... I did ask, if anyone's thinking like, you know, you're such an ass, like, for asking these questions, if she wants to find closure on this, I did ask Lata. I always say your name, the way I say your name, it's just ingrained now. I did ask Lata that if this is okay. And one of the reasons you said you do want to talk about it is because, one, if other people find inspiration from your journey, but also, two, if people stop speeding, because there are major repercussions to doing it. And I'd love to say on this podcast that I do never, ever go over the speed limit. Unfortunately, that is not true, but I do. I will. Mm-hmm. I vow to you to not speed ever. Yeah. And I'm not saying that I like guys in like majorly, you know, like aggressive, but I get speeding is speeding, whether it's 1 mile over or 35 miles over. And when you see someone is impacted and their life is impacted like this, how can you do something like that? So if you get anything from this podcast, let it be at least that.
Agreed.
Is there anything that you would like to say to people listening, and leave them on a note, last note?
I think the biggest thing for me is always the mental health side, because physically I always look like I've healed. I mean, if you saw me a year ago, I looked like I had healed a year ago physically. Mentally, I had not healed. So my sort of takeaway for everyone is, if you're struggling, if you're in a bad place, don't think you're alone, because you are never alone. Just try and seek out help with your friends, or if it's not your friends, I know that the GPs do offer some sort of, I think it's like 6 therapy sessions that can sort of get you started. So yeah, it's just to reach out. You're not alone, basically.
There's a great message to end on, because it's absolutely true. And you are an absolutely wonderful human. And I take inspiration from your journey. I told you this all the time. You were someone who was very motivating to me. After training you, it was very easy to go and train, because mm-hmm. to see your effort, your progress, your continual, like, you know, coming back and just going for it and not accepting, you know, defeat, was truly remarkable. And it's continued to light a fire in me already. So I hope it's done the same for you. If you enjoyed that, please leave us a review, share this with your friends, share this with someone who you know would take some inspiration from it. Lata, where can people find you?
On Instagram, I'm at Lally's Journey.
Brilliant. I will link that up below. I hope you have a wonderful day, guys. Over and out.